second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday morning. Brought to you by Blue Note, Juke Joints, smoother than smooth. Every Thursday at this time, we go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and we bring in the GM, Floyd Reese. Brought to you by Sealmaster, keeping your parking lots looking brand new. Floyd can be heard right after our show today. Jared and the GM, Monday through Friday from 2 until 6. I've noticed that's the theme. We've got the two shows going up against each other that join us every Thursday. Paul Feinbaum at 10:15, 94.9 from 2 to 6. And the GM, Floyd Reese, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game from 2 to 6 Monday through Friday. Floyd, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing this beautiful day?
It is. It's been a beautiful week. The weather's been fantastic.
Really?
All week.
Yes.
Can we like package this up and just keep this for the rest of 2020?
That would be nice. Year.
Yeah. Walk us through what John Robinson did the other day while you were on the air and our show was done. Just when you have to make tough choices as a general manager, you do, and you have to just decide enough is enough and cut bait in the middle of the season.
Yeah, he's much more courageous than I ever was. You know, I always pawn that off on Jeff. go talk about it, Jeff. I don't want to go out there. They'll rip me. You know what? It is, it's a tough part of the business. And I think, you know, if you look at where this team is and the number of players he's brought in, and then you look at the number that haven't worked out, I mean, he's way, way ahead of the average. And so, you know, he's probably a little bit more confident to do that. I mean, it was the right thing to do. I thought he handled it well. You know, that for whatever reason, and I'm not sure we'll ever know all the ins and outs, but for whatever reason, that whole thing didn't work really for either side. And, you know, it's sometimes better to just end those things. You know, sometimes it's more than just football. You know, sometimes an attitude or a practice habit or, you know, how actions in the locker room, some of those kinds of things affect the team. And if you sense that, you know, then I think it's time to really quickly make a move, get that taken care of.
You kind of said last week or the week before, I don't remember, the last couple weeks, you said, I knew you would bring up Vince Young when we were talking about the quarterback. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pump up your tires because I did bring up Vince Young on that day and say, I thought you were very good at bringing in people. That you're free. You had a lot of home runs with free agent signings, whether it was big contracts or just guys off the scrap heap, and it worked out. Take us through that process and in particular, a guy like Vic Beasley, who we trotted guys on from Atlanta who covered him when the Titans signed him, and we were just basically begging for somebody to say, you know what, it didn't work out in Atlanta, the Falcons are just, you know, dysfunctional family, this coaching staff probably isn't going to make it, but you'll see a different Vic Beasley in Nashville. You know, Mike Vrabel and that staff will get the most out of him. I wouldn't be surprised if he just turns into a different player in Tennessee. We couldn't get anybody to say that. We were, you know, just looking for somebody to do something other than the narrative that was out there on him. So the question I have, Floyd, is you've got to have confidence in what you do. You can't worry about what everybody else does. But there is a balance, right, because you can't change everybody. So how do you handle that balance of being confident that you guys can do things differently than somebody else, but also knowing that it's a big risk because there are just some people, it doesn't matter what staff it is, you're not going to change them.
Yeah, and I think that is the most difficult part about free agency, bringing somebody in that you don't really know. Some of the people that we brought, like a Kevin Carter, we brought Kevin in, even though in St. Louis at the time, you know, his reputation was maybe not what you thought it was. And the reason we did that was because we vetted him so strongly when he was coming out because we were so interested. He was going to be somebody that we were going to draft. And we felt like we knew this kid. And so it wasn't as important what happened elsewhere because we felt like we had enough information, we can bring him in, and he will fit here, and he will be fine. That is the toughest part about free agency. You know, I mean, can AB play? Sure he can. Well, playing isn't his problem. It's all the other things. And those are the things that are so hard to find out, because people don't want to, you know, don't want to kill the kid. They don't want to, you know, maybe say some things that are maybe out of, you know, out of proportion as to what they really were. And there's a lot of that. And if you don't really know people that can give you the straight scoop, it's easy to bring somebody in and find out after he's in here that, you know what, he doesn't really fit in our locker room. He doesn't really practice the way we want him to practice. He's not really reacting to the coaches the way that we thought he would. As to your locker room and bringing guys in, for me, the best example was New England. And they didn't get every one of these right either, but the locker room was really, really strong. But beyond the strength of the locker room, there was Tom Brady. And I don't care who you are. I don't care, you know, if you're an alpha, a triple alpha. When you go into that locker room and Tom Brady's in that locker room, you kind of sit down and listen, you know. And Tom was strong enough in everything that happened that he could, for the most part, get those guys to change. You know, get those guys, Randy Moss, for example, you know, that Randy had some issues early. We all know that. But when he got to New England, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better guy, a better teammate, you know, better player. And I think beyond having a strong locker room, you have to have a person or a group of guys, maybe it's more than one, that are just so strong, I'm talking about throughout the league, that they command some kind of respect. Because if you don't, when you bring in a guy like I mentioned AB before, a guy like AB comes in, well, he's strong now. You know, his personality's strong. His reputation is strong. His skill set is strong. His checking account is strong. You know, just everything about him is strong. And you have to have somebody in that locker room that even he will listen to. And if you've got that guy, then you're probably okay. If you don't, then you have to be very, very careful about who comes in and how your locker room reacts to him.
Well, with that being said, do you think that this Titans locker room is missing some of those strong leaders, strong personalities, guys that took control of the room like Jarrell Casey and Wesley Woodyard and Logan Ryan? Do you think they're missing that ingredient right now in the room?
You know, I don't know that they are in my mind, and I don't know how he reacts in the locker room, but it's probably hard to find somebody stronger than Derrick Henry. You know, when you think throughout the league and you think, is there anybody, you know, first of all, his physical appearance, he's a giant, you know, leading the league in rushing, you know, tough as nails, all of those kinds of things. Now, does he have the personality to be that guy? I don't know. But guys like that, and like maybe a Taylor Lewan, and maybe Tannehill, I'm not sure. But there are guys, Byard, you know, that are fairly strong. You know, are they looked at with that strength throughout the league? You know, maybe not exactly the way we do, but I still think they're pictured as strong, strong guys.
Talking to Floyd Reese, Jared and the GM later today. Of course, he's brought to you by Sealmaster. Floyd, I've been kicking this around to different people this week. With the Corey Davis situation, he's had a really nice start to the year. There's a long way to go, but he's becoming more and more, I think, of a known quantity. And as you know, it's kind of a wild card to spend big money on a free agent receiver who hasn't played for you. And it's also a little bit of a wild card to draft and try to bring somebody in and insert them, even though it's much less expensive. So with that in mind, would you be thinking about going to Corey Davis and coming up with some sort of package to throw at him, also knowing that the salary cap could be coming down, the market could be a little less certain than it is in some years?
And I think that's the way I would approach it, Willie, is just the way you did. Hey, listen, we all know next year the cap's not going to be what we all want it to be. It's going to be far less. There's going to be far less money for free agency. Therefore, you know, would you consider, and I think I would start it that way, kind of approach it that way. And maybe, you know, maybe instead of saying, okay, we'll give you a 6-year contract, say, no, how about a 1-year or maybe a 2-year? And let's just get past this bad year. And then when we get back on schedule, you know, we can go ahead and work something out if things work out at that point in time. Because I'm going to guess, and again, if you're the number one guy in free agency, if he's the absolute best receiver out there, then he'll get paid. You know, somebody will pay him. I just have to imagine, and I have no idea what the free agency list looks like. I would have to imagine that there'll be a couple of guys out there that will be, you know, at least at Corey's level, if not above. And therefore, you know, if you're not the first guy, if you're the fourth guy, I mean, the drop-off, especially in a cap-tight year, the drop-off from 1 to 4, I mean, it may be, you know, on the total deal, it may be $20, $30 million.
So if you look down the road, if you're John Robinson, what does the receiver position look like if he's not in it? That would have to influence how you go about this year.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think you know, if it doesn't work out and it comes down to it and you've got to franchise them or, you know, whatever you need to do, then that's probably the way you'll have to go, even though that number will be outrageous, I'm sure. But, you know, I mean, we and I've said from the beginning, you know, the receiver position from a draft standpoint, I screwed that thing up 20 years ago, and nobody's gotten it fixed yet. You know, it's been so bad for so long. And so if you do get somebody and you do think he is, you know, maybe he's not an all-pro. You know, he's not going to catch 100 balls. But, man, oh, man, is he good for us. You know, he really fits us, and we like him, and he's our kind of guy, and all of those things. Then, you know, you need to probably try to find a way to keep that guy. Because, like you said, going into the draft, I mean, for us, has really been a crapshoot, and we have not done very well.
When you look at Khalil Mack and the trade that the Bears made, I saw an interesting deep dive into this. You know, there's a lot of details because a lot of the draft picks that were exchanged turned into other draft picks, and it's been 2 years, and there's a lot to sort out there. But it's an interesting one to look at because I think the Bears are certainly happy that they got Khalil Mack. He's still a dynamic player. But the Raiders are also pretty happy with all of what they got in that deal. So who do you think won that trade, if there is such an answer to that?
You know, I'm just guessing. It looked like it may have worked out for both. You know, Chicago,
I think both teams would say that.
He certainly made a difference in Chicago's team. You know, there's no doubt about that. I mean, he electrified that pass rush and the things they did and that defensive front and all of that. And by the same token, the Raiders, in the position they were in and John was in and, you know, just getting there. And, I mean, let's face it, pass rushers are as hard to find, you know, legitimate pass rushers as hard to find as you know, quarterbacks or all-pro corners or where they're just – aren't many of them out there. So if you get a chance to get one, I mean, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. You know that. But in your mind, if it's worth, like next year for us, let's say, you know, we decided pass rush is overwhelming need and we have got to sell our soul to go out there and get a pass rusher, then what it cost, you know, to get him, I mean, you may be willing to pay that. It's just such a, you know, they're so few and far between. And the effect that they have, you know, think about way back when we got Javon and we got Kevin and we got, you know, those guys together, the effect that had not only on our team but on our defense. You know, we there for a while, our defense was pretty darn good. You know, people didn't look forward to playing us because of that. And it was all kind of led by the pass rush, not taking anything away from the rest of those guys. But, I mean, people knew that the ball had to come out quickly or else you were going to get smacked.
We're talking to the GM, Floyd Reese, 2-6 weekdays here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. So, Floyd, one thing we know is that Mike Vrabel has a very good ability of connecting with his team. His players like playing for him. He's not that far removed from playing in the league, and so he seems to have a very good relationship with his players and is able to get the best out of them, like we were talking about potentially with Vic Beasley. But as the GM, how closely do you monitor that to see, okay, the head coach, the players, they're on the same page, they're vibing, you can tell that the relationship is good, but was there ever a point in your career where you felt like you needed to step in and have a conversation one way or the other if things didn't look right?
You know, I can't remember ever doing that. Now, what happens, or at least what happened with me, was I had coached for so long, you know. So for me to not be on the practice field, not be in the training room, not be in the weight room, not be in all of the areas that they kind of congregate, that was unusual for me. So I would find, you know, if I was looking for a place to get out of the office for a second to catch my breath, I would run down and visit Haas in the equipment room, or I'd run in and visit Brad in the training room or something. Well, there's always players around, and you're always hearing players talk. And if I ever, you know, picked up something that I thought was a bad vibe, or picked up something that was said about somebody else that I thought was important, I would go to Jeff with it, you know, and I would say, maybe, hey, you need to maybe talk to, you know, to Floyd. I heard him in there griping about, you know, not about playtime or scheme or when we're blitzing or whatever the case may be. I'm not sure he fully understands what's going on. It might be a good idea if you guys call him in and just sit and visit with him for a second. Now, I don't know if he ever did it. You know, I never checked up on him, but I would do that periodically. But I don't ever remember, you know, going to him and saying, hey, the locker room is really, you know, in an uproar about whatever it might be.
Is that different? You mentioned that you know, you were a coach for so long. Is that the hardest part for, you know, whether it's Vrabel that was a player or you that you were a coach and moved to the front office, of letting go, not completely letting go of the old job, but, you know, kind of moving on and knowing that they're very different?
Yeah. It is, and your background, in my opinion, you know, always kind of dictates where you gravitate. And, you know, in my situation, if I had been an accountant or a lawyer, you know, I probably would have stayed upstairs and gone down and visited, you know, one of the lawyers or one of the marketing people or one of the, but, you know, let's face it, I didn't have a lot to say to those guys. You know, where I could go down to Haas, or I'd go to Brad, you know, I'd go to Watterson and sit and, you know, carry on a conversation like we'd been together all day long. So that was just natural to me, easy to me, and I probably felt the most comfortable doing that.
What should be the realistic expectation for a Desmond King that just got acquired via trade, and then if a Dory Jackson is activated and plays, for those two guys this weekend against Chicago?
You know, if of course with King, you don't know, because he's just not going to have any practice time. And I don't know, you know, because he has been playing, all of those things. Maybe it's an easier transition than you think. You just don't know. But from a speed standpoint, you know, just from a schematic standpoint, I think it allows you options. It allows you to do some things you've been scared to death to do, you know, because it's pretty easy with anybody that's out there saying, okay, when you hear this, it's a blitz. That means you take that guy you're on man for man all over the field. And you know, any corner in the league can understand that part of it. So, you know, you can say to yourself, okay, I feel better about the possibility of blitzing. I feel better about the possibility of bringing, I guess this King kid is a good blitzer. I mean, he's got, I think I read someplace, he's got like 7.5 sacks himself.
Yep.
So, you know, you feel better about running a slot blitz like we used to run, you know, and got so many good plays out of it. Simply because you know the possibility of you covering those receivers is much, much better. You know, I mean, let's face it, it's each week, and we started talking about Joseph, you know, way, way back in, you know, and I don't want to point the finger at him alone because I think what happened to him was unfair in that he was brought in to do a job and was forced into another job. You know,
that is so true.
Yeah, he brought in to be an assistant coach, and all of a sudden somebody walked to him and said, hey, you're going to be the head coach today. Well, you know what? I am prepared for this. I'm not quite right. And he was thrown into a position where now he's got to go out there and he's got to play every snap. And you know, he knows he can't run. And he knows the guy he's lined up on, if he takes off and goes, he's not going to be able to run with him. And so, you know, he's smart enough and savvy enough to say, okay, I better play soft. I better back up. I better, you know, which is a smart thing to do. But if the guy catches the ball, you know, am I going to be close enough to where I can tackle him? And he just got thrown into a real mess. So I don't, you know, it's hard for me to, I understand what happened. You know, you can't disagree with it simply because if you look over the last 3 or 4 weeks, you know, I got worried about it about 3 or 4 weeks ago when I, you know, there was a play or two and I'm watching him and I'm going, you know what? That guy can't run. He can't run a lick. And then the next week he was targeted 4 times. And then the next week he was targeted 6 times. And then, you know, this week he was targeted, I don't know how many times.
And if they'd played this week, they would put it up on the scoreboard. We are coming after Jonathan Joseph. Like, there's not even a secret. It's like, it's
yeah. Surprise, surprise. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but he got caught in that, and, you know, you had to do something.
He is the GM, Floyd Reese, 2-6 weekdays here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd, appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Floyd Reese brought to you by Sealmaster, keeping your parking lots looking brand new. Titans and Bears coming up this weekend. We will continue to discuss that when we come back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Thank you, Sean. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints. Smoother than smooth. We appreciate Floyd Reese for joining us. He does that every Thursday to start the second hour. Mike Vrabel just spoke with the media, getting ready for the Bears on Sunday. And here's what Titans head coach Mike Vrabel had to say, and this is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville.
Good morning, Mike. Mike, your offense the last couple weeks has started a little slow. Is there anything in particular that you can do to try to maybe help them get started a little faster on Sunday?
You know what I mean? Just probably take care of the details, finish, you know, penalties. You know, getting ourselves in third and manageable situations and, you know, just being able to finish some drives.
Mike, what has impressed you about Nick Foles during the course of his career and what's the challenge in facing him Sunday?
You know, veteran, seen a lot of things. He can execute a lot of different aspects of their offense. You know, whether it's the boot game, the RPOs, quick game, you know, he's getting more comfortable with Mooney. Obviously, he's got a great rapport with Robinson. You know, so I think, you know, I mean, he's seen a lot of different looks and has been, you know, well coached in the places that he's been.
And how much are you monitoring? You've got to get your football team ready to play, but how much are you monitoring what's going on in Chicago as they close their facility today?
You know, we've, you know, been through this and we'll, you know, we'll continue to prepare as if we're playing Sunday until we hear otherwise. And that's all we can do, Jim.
I think to follow up on that, Mike, though, when you're on this side of it, is the league in pretty constant contact with you right now about what's going on up there, or is it radio silence until there's news?
I haven't heard anything from anybody other than from Stretch, so that's where I got my news.
Yeah, Mike, kind of following up on that, is given the experience you guys have already went through, I mean, do you have a different kind of understanding for a team that could be dealing with that kind of issue just because you've seen it up close?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, I can't even speculate, Gentry, on what happened, what didn't happen, the reasons for doing it. You know, again, we're trying to follow the protocols and to make sure that everything is good here, and that our, you know, you're seeing a lot of these close contacts, and those are things that we take very seriously. And I'm not really sure what the reason is. I don't have any information, so for me to speak on it, you know, I wouldn't want to, you know, speculate.
Mike, when we talked to Arthur this morning, he sounded like he was pretty pleased with the run blocking effort across the board in Cincinnati. With Deontay Foreman and Jeremy McNichols, do they add anything, I guess, different to the offense than you would get out of somebody like Derek when they're in there to spell him?
I mean, they're different players, and they may make different cuts. I mean, we give, you know, the guy with the ball, the player with the football, the ability to, you know, make great decisions. And, you know, those guys may make different decisions than what Derek would, and each and every back is a little different in how they see and what their vision may look like. You know, so we're not changing anything. It's just that, you know, they may execute a run based on the look that they see and their read differently than maybe Derek would.
Hey, Mike, Jeffrey Simmons aside, who specifically has improved defensively this season in terms of development?
Well, I mean, we're always trying to continue to develop and improve. You know, and again, that's our job as we work our way through the season. You know, what happens is we get, you know, numbers get down. You know, some guys may practice Wednesday. Some guys may not practice on Thursday. And so it's critical, you know, Paul, that we continue to find ways to develop players in our football team when we're not practicing. You know, so that whether it's Jeffrey Simmons or any of them, you know, we're all going to have to try to get better. We're all going to have to try to continue to improve and see where we can go and get better.
You're nearly halfway through the season. Are there a couple guys you could single out as better than they were last year?
You know, that's every year is different, and I'm not, you know, going to go through and give a scouting report to where we're at. You know, I mean, we got to find 11 guys that on all three phases that know what to do, that are willing to communicate and go execute and do their jobs and, you know, win one-on-one matchups. That's the whole goal in all three phases, special teams, offense, and defensively.
Mike, how much do you have to prepare for a guy like Khalil Mack, and how special of a player is he on that defense?
I mean, obviously, you know, we better know where he's at. We better be able to block him. We better be able to find a way to neutralize him. He's a talented player, instinctive player. Hicks, you know, is another guy. They got active defensive line. They play a lot of people. You know, Quinn has sacked the quarterback and disrupted plays for a lot of years. Fast on the inside with Trevathan and Smith, and you know, secondaries well coached. They disguise well. So it'll be a huge challenge, not only with Khalil, but the entire defense. But obviously, he's a great player, fantastic player. He's got power, you know, can win on the edge, and is a disruptive player.
What's the challenge like, Mike? I know it's every week, too, is when you're dealing with guys that are out and injured. But what's special teams practice been like as far as finding a holder, trying to work through a practice where you don't know who your punter is going to be yet, and how have you managed that so far?
Well, that's what we do all the time, Jim. We find out who's available to practice, put them in places that can help us. You know, it's all part of the job, is finding out who's going to be available, finding ways to have guys ready in maybe positions that they haven't been in or positions that they'll need to understand for the game if they need to be in a backup role. So, you know, we've had multiple guys playing different positions, not only this week, but throughout the season.
Mike, I'm not asking for a scouting report, but circling back to my question, your reluctance to name names there suggests there's been a failure of guys to develop, doesn't it? You can't name three guys, say, that have improved and gotten better over the course of this season?
No, I could. You know, I mean, I just, again, I have a philosophy that I want to try to continue with our improvement, you know, and sit here and say that, well, this guy is playing better than he did last year. Some of the guys weren't on the team last year, so you know, I wouldn't be able to compare them from last year to this year. You know, and that's just not how you play great defense or play great offense. And, you know, for us to return punts, we're going to need the 10 other guys blocking. For us to gain yards, we're going to need 10 guys doing their job on offense. And certainly on defense, that would be, you know, the way that we want to play is team defense, communicate, just the things that I mentioned, you know, understand our job, communicate, and win one-on-one matchups.
When or if you get a Dory back, what do you add to the defense that maybe has been missing a little bit so far this year?
We haven't played a game with a Dory, so you know, this year, so couldn't tell you what we would be missing or gaining. You know, I mean, we've got to get them out there. We've got to get the guys that are you know, working their way back from injury. We've got to get them back out there so that we can, you know, start to, you know, figure out where guys fit. And Adoree's been working. He's been practicing. You know, we'll see how it looks here at the end of the week.
Yeah, Mike, when we've talked to some of the defensive players, the common theme has been communication defensively. I'm curious where you think those issues might come from. Is that bringing in new players and teaching them the scheme, or is that – or are we misreading what that means to say lack of communication?
No, I just said we have to improve the communication. That was just something that I, you know, always think that is important. You know, somebody's, you know, you're standing next to somebody and, you know, you have a job and, you know, if you can help him do his job better, you communicate what you might see, the look you might see, something that you took from practice. And, you know, again, don't take what I said as that those things were negative. Just because Paul asked it, it wasn't negative. Those are things that I believe in that we can always be better at. Hey, this is the look. Hey, what about this? Be alert for this. And you know, this is the game that I'm running, or this is the coverage concept that we're going to work with. All those types of things that I think are critical to play a team sport.
There you go. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel talking about this week's preparation for the Bears on Sunday, and that was brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Sometimes you get good stuff, and sometimes you don't.
He was not giving up any insight or detail today, and I think he was trying to explain that's his philosophy with those specific types of questions, and the people asking those questions already know that, but they're still going to try to see if he'll say anything
right
there.
Maybe they'll
I wasn't surprised at
day
all. Yeah, I wasn't surprised at all that that's the direction he went. But I think the big thing that I was wondering, which I was, you know, really curious, is why nobody's really trying to get into detail on these last couple of press conferences, what's the deal with Brett Kern? It's such a huge part of the game. What do we know right now? It seems still very up in the air.
Yeah,
and the one question he was asked, he provided absolutely nothing in terms of what they think they've got or don't have.
Yeah, that one is, I mean, it was already a concern, but now it's becoming an even bigger concern because it's Thursday. Now, they probably have, you know, plan A, which is Kern plays. They probably have plan B. But, I mean, if you're is it Tucker McCann? I mean, is that the guy that's going to punt if Kern can't? I mean, I know he has punted in his collegiate career, but...
Well, if you were to make a roster move and bring somebody in from the outside, what are the rules in terms of how quickly that person can join you? Aren't we kind of past the window?
Yeah, I think so. That's how I understand it. So that's why, I mean...
So it's got to be him, right?
It would have to be McCann unless Guskowski has some secret talent that we don't know about, and he can punt.
Which is sad, you know. It's happened
before.
You could
do a drop kick, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
hasn't he done that before?
I think he
but
has.
But that's not a punt, right? If you're punting and you drop kick it, that's like an attempt at a field goal.
Yeah,
right. You can't.
That's true.
Drop kick for a punt. You have to punt it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what they're gonna do.
I was thinking more of the holder aspect.
So do we think that...
Khalif Raymond, he's a punter too.
Well, do we think that this means that they feel like there's at least a reasonable chance that Kern could punt? in his situation? We don't even know the specifics of the injury, right?
It's a wrist. About it.
Yeah, Benny, but I mean, like, what happens? And obviously he's been practicing, but, you know, he practices all week. He warms up and, you know, they get into the game and it, you know, he's doing it more consistently and all of a sudden he's in the second half and he's not getting the grip he needs because the wrist is all messed up. I mean, they're screwed at that point.
Well, you don't think they don't know that? I mean,
well, I would assume that they know that, but I assume a lot of things that I'm wrong on. So.
Well, but all we can look at is have they made a roster move? Because what we're trying to piece together is
no, they
what
still
is
have
Vic
Beasley listed on the roster, right. So I don't know what they've done.
Well, I still would love to know the move. If they get into an emergency situation, it would seem like McCann is the only option, or Gostkowski, to actually punt.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's a major factor in the game. So
I think they know they have a plan. They're just not to talk
telling
about
us.
It.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're just not going to talk about it.
Which
it's not like they're going to be on Sunday going,
they don't want
oh,
the Bears.
Oh crap! Oh crap! Now what do we do? I mean, it's you know they know their course of action. They're just it's very clear they're just not going to talk about it.
Right. Which, they probably don't want to let the Bears know.
Which
what the deal is.
Under the new roster rules, they can, since Tucker McCann is on the practice squad, they can activate him the day of
game.
The game.
Day of yep. game, you're right.
And so they could, and I wouldn't be shocked by this at all if they're both active. If Kern's active, if McCann's active, assuming that McCann is the emergency punter, because again, he has punted.
It wouldn't be ideal to do that.
Then you're down a spot somewhere else.
Take another guy off. Yeah,
right.
I'd rather not go that route.
You're got to make a decision. Either
yeah.
either
you
got to
tell me
can
you finish the game. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no way you're carrying a punter and two kickers because now you're short somewhere else.
I don't disagree, but I'm also not going to say there's no way you don't do something in 2020.
And people have carried an extra. I mean, people have put an extra kicker on there. Sometimes you have an extra guy just to do kickoffs.
Well, yeah,
you
have the kickoff
happen,
guy.
But as Darren said, what you sacrifice another spot of a guy that you probably would use somewhere.
I agree. I would rather, in a perfect world, you have it all figured out. But you know, there
this
are also
not a perfect world.
There are also timetables that, you know, it might be like, all right, Kern's got to go out there Sunday morning and see how he feels. But at what point do you have to have – you know, have the decision made. I don't know, but
I'm going to come back and tell you something, a thought that I have on what this means if the Titans lose this game. We're going to do that on the other side, but right now I want to talk to you about DraftKings because it is live and up and running in our state of Tennessee. Yeah, mobile sports betting is here as of Sunday morning. It has been here, and you've heard us talking about it. That's at DraftKings. You may know them as the leading daily fantasy brand, but they've taken their passion for sports and developed America's top-rated sportsbook app. This isn't some offshore operation like a lot of the other gambling sites. DraftKings is a legitimate sportsbook that's based right here in the U.S. And with DraftKings Sportsbook app, you can bet from wherever, whenever. You don't even have to leave your house. All you have to do is download the top-rated sportsbook app right now and use the code 1025GAME when you sign up. For a limited time, all new users will get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Once again, that code 1025GAME and get your deposit bonus up to $1,000. That's only at DraftKings Sportsbook app. You must be 21 years of age or older. That's Tennessee only. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem or wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints. Smoother than smooth, silly underdog picks coming up at high noon. 2 5-win teams going to collide at Nissan Stadium on Sunday. Da Bear, as Chase called him earlier today in the show, Da Bear, Da Bear and Titan. No, he didn't say Titan. But the Titans and the Bears will get together, and I will tell you guys this. One, I've predicted the Titans wrong basically all season against the spread. I think the only game I got right was the Steelers. I've been completely wrong all season long. But this is not really about the spread. This is just simply about the game. If they lose to the Bears, and I know they've got issues going on just like the Bears and everybody else in the league, I'm willing to say it. And a lot of people have already been saying it, and I haven't been willing to go there. This team's a fraud if they don't beat the Bears on Sunday. They're a fraud. All the holes and problems that they have that people have pointed out, and certainly we have pointed out, but I have not been willing to go there to say they are frauds. Other people have. And the reason I feel so strongly about that is because I believe this Bears team coming in here is a fraud. Nobody looks at them as a five-win team. They've won five games. Nobody talks about the Bears as a team in the NFC you better watch out for. I watched them on Sunday. Yes, their defense is good. Their offense, give me a break. It's terrible. Of course, the Titans' defense is terrible. But this Bears team, there was nothing I was wild about. Nothing. Nothing that jumped out of me where I was like, okay.
The defense doesn't jump out at you?
Yeah, defense is good. It's good. I'll tell you what, Tampa's defense, when I watch them, jumps out a lot more than the Bears defense to me. But the Bears are a fraud.
They're complemented by a pretty good offense.
They're a fraud. The Bears are a fraud. Look, you can dress this up however you want it. The Bears are a fraud. Nobody believes they're that great of a team. They may find a way to sneak into the playoffs, maybe. I don't believe they're even a playoff team. I don't think they're that good. So I'm willing to say they're a fraud. So if you can't beat a team after you've lost two in a row that I already think is a fraud and you've got problems that we've been talking about, I think you're a fraud. I don't know how I couldn't say that. So to me, they have to beat the Bears. Or I'm willing to say now what a lot of people have already been saying. The Titans really aren't that good. So in my mind, you got to beat the Bears.
I don't disagree with you. I don't think it's that bold of a statement because we've seen the Titans lose to a very good team in Pittsburgh, and it was a close game, but they lost. And then we saw them turn around the next week and get dominated by a not good team in Cincinnati. So to me, that is all right. Is it just a letdown? Is it inconsistencies? What? All right. We'll see what happens. But still, it's not good. If you turn around and you lose the third game in a row to a team that's, yeah, they got five wins, but they're not great. They're okay. They're middle of the pack. I agree. I think it's just you're not.
That they're a fraud?
Yeah.
That's a
yeah.
strong word. I completely disagree with you guys. So last year when they were 4-5, they were a fraud, I guess. They had been a fraud. Well, last year the Titans were 4-5 at one point right. in the year. This year, if they lose this game, they'll be 5-3 at the halfway point. That's not a fraud. They don't have to apologize for being 5-3. They've got a huge chunk of the season left, and they could make a lot of that.
As we know, records don't tell the whole story.
So you think records,
the records don't tell the story?
No, they don't.
The whole story.
No, they don't.
You don't believe in the Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are?
No, because no. I've watched this team all year, and the one consistent thing that we've said every week is, yeah, they, you know, even when they were undefeated, yeah, they won. But if they don't get this defense turned around, that could come back to bite them. Yeah, they won, but they can't get to the quarterback. And guess what? They've now lost two in a row because of those things that we've been saying.
Right,
yeah, but
and they could lose three in a row. But you know what? They would still have a half a season to figure out how to patch up the defense. There's a lot that can happen.
So you think they're just going to magically go, oh, hey, guys, I just figured it out. I know what we've been doing
wrong. It's the second
wrong.
Half, so now we'll fix everything. Now that it's the second half of the season.
It's happened many times before.
A lot of things happen. And last year was different.
You guys will declare them a fraud. I'm not saying it's going to get fixed, but I'm not declaring the season over and they're a fraud and they're not going anywhere. A lot can happen. especially if you're 5-3 at the halfway point.
They could easily
point.
Be 3-5 that easy.
But they're not. They're 5-2.
So you just think a record is a record, and you don't ever judge them by what their record is. You don't say they're really not that good, or they're overrated, or actually that team is better than what their records are. You don't ever do that. Really?
You
don't
do
ever look at a team and go, actually, they're better than what their record shows. I've watched them. They're better than that. They've had a bad break here, a bad break there, bad call there, bad schedule there. They're really better than that. You don't ever do that with a team. You just say, hey, that's what their record is. They are what they are, really.
I still like a lot with what they've got. They've got Derrick
Henry.
That's
how you do it. That's how you do it.
They've got Ryan Tannehill. They have a top-level offense. And so you can do some things with that.
And there's special
a half
teams.
A season to figure
so
it out.
So you've named a third of what we always say you need, you know, offense, defense, special teams. So you've named a third. What about the other two-thirds?
The other two-thirds are a big question mark. But you guys are calling them a fraud if they lose this game. I'm saying they're not. I'm saying there's a half a season to be played to see if they can improve in those areas. And I think it's reasonable to say they can improve in those areas. They can't get much worse on special teams than they played.
Yeah, I just the problem is they're gonna it's gonna have to be a huge improvement for them to do what you're saying because they're halfway through. This is what they are, and they just cut three guys to try and help with that.
Right.
And
that's what their idea is to try to get better.
But their answer is gonna be yeah, they made a trade, but their answer is gonna be practice squad guys, which it could work. But the odds of that are not very good in my opinion.
But
if you don't
beat the
Bears,
there's a difference in saying that than a fraud.
You're a fraud.
Through the season, it's over. You're a fraud.
I didn't say it's over. I said you're a fraud. Okay, you're not. You're
before
not a
you
Super
even
Bowl
play
contender.
The Colts, you're going to call them a fraud
not,
before they
you're
even.
You're not
hit.
A beast in the AFC. You're just a fraud. Doesn't mean you can't get into the playoffs. Teams that are fraudulent get into the playoffs.
It happened.
Mitch Trubisky's first year with the Bears. He got them in the playoffs. They won the division, and nobody was picking them to win. And they lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Eagles.
Has a team ever gone through a rough patch of a season and then come out the other side and look pretty good? That's why I refer to last year's team at 4-5.
They weren't
very good at that point, and then they turned into a pretty darn good team down the stretch. So there is ebb and flow to a season where you can get through
a
rough part of the season.
They change quarterbacks. Yeah. That's a big deal. They're not changing linebackers and guys on the defensive line. Like they don't
yes,
have
they are. They just got rid of one of them.
Right. It's not a quarterback.
It's a defensive end or outside linebacker. They're changing. They're trying to move.
So Roberson is like changing Mariota to Tannehill.
You keep Tannehill.
You get the same spark?
No, you won't get the same spark because Tannehill became one of the best in the league. This defense doesn't have to be the best in the league.
A guy that has the ball in his hands every play. Oh, he became the – there's nobody that determines
My
a game
is,
more than that position.
That's right, and they have that position figured out. And they have the best running back in football, and that can mask a lot of problems. The defense doesn't have to be great. They just have to go from bad to okay, and I think that's reasonable.
Okay.
And the special teams has to get better, so – before they even play the Colts twice, you're going to declare them a fraud if they lose this game. I think that's a little short-sighted.
If they lose to the Bears, they're a fraud.
No.
Yeah. They are.
Well, we'll have fun next week with that if they lose this game because
you don't beat the Bears, you're a fraud, period. This Bears team is not that good.
No, they're not
great. And
you're
just coming off a loss to the
Bengals. This is the NFL. Every week there are tough games.
And you're coming off a game losing to the Bengals. Yeah.
Right. At the halfway point, you'd be 5-3 and still very much in the race in the second half for a division and for a playoff spot.
You can't keep losing to bad teams and people not question what you're doing.
Not for a whole season.
Nobody questioned anything after losing to the Steelers. But now that you've lost to the Bengals, and if you can't take care of business against the Bears, you're not that good. You just simply aren't. And
they lost to the Jaguars last year.
Yeah, and they beat the Jaguars by 3 this year. And the Jags haven't won a game since game 1.
Last year, they
beat them by a field goal and gave up 30.
By the end of the year last year, they were very good. But at certain stages of the year, they weren't very good. You can go through bad patches of a season.
There's not good teams that they played. The Broncos they beat by 2, the Jags by 3, and the Texans in overtime after giving up 36.
Yeah, W's.
And by the way, how many W's is that between those three teams? That's about, what, 4 wins? I think, between those three teams.
Right.
And so you don't judge that at all. You just say, well, their record's 5-2, and they're great.
Pittsburgh has beaten the Giants and the Jets. Are they apologizing for having to play bad teams and winning? They played the Broncos.
Steelers are coming off a win, two wins of beating an undefeated team in the Ravens. So nobody's.
No, a fraud. But one of the teams was a fraud, you just said, the Titans. So how good was that win for the
Steelers? Have I called them a fraud today? No, that's not what I'm calling them. I said if they lose to the Bears, yes. You don't beat the Bears, you're not that good. Yes, you're not that good. You really aren't.
Not that good that day. You can come out of a slump.
And the reason that I agree with Darren is because the things that we have seen to say, okay, they're not very good, they haven't just magically appeared. They've been there all year. And we've said it. We go, well, all right, the offense is playing well. It's a really good offense. But there are things on defense that if they don't get that fixed, it's going to come back to bite them because now the film's out and teams are able to study. And, oh, by the way, the schedule gets harder.
Long way to go. Just as if I'm not going to sit here and say they're a Super Bowl. They're going to win the Super Bowl if they win the game on Sunday. It's just 1-16. You got a long way to go. But worst case, they lose. They're 5-3 at the halfway point. Better than last year. Not as big of a hole to climb out of. They're still very much in it. That's my point.
We'll come back. Silly underdog picks to start the third hour. That's next.